Welcome to Convos and Cocktails, where we engage, you listen, and we all drink. I'm your host, Lesego Tlhabi, and I'm ready to wine a little and laugh a lot with our guest. On today's episode, we have Phumi Morare, a director. Is that what we call you?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, director in studio. And we'll be discussing matters of pivoting at a later stage, also her career, her movie. And the cocktail today is a Cosmopolitan. We ask guests to choose a cocktail. Is there a specific story you have with a Cosmo? Why do you like it so much?
Unfortunately, it's not that deep. Literally.
It doesn't have to be.
Yeah, it's literally, I love the shape of the glass that they normally come in mm-hmm. when you order them at like bars and stuff, and the color. And then, I was reading that Sex and the City made the Cosmo like popular, and that was like one of those like series of the millennial generation, that like one of those series that empowered women. So yeah. That's why.
I know. The first time I had one, I thought I was on Sex and the City. I was very bougie.
Yeah.
Cheers. Welcome to the podcast.
Cheers.
Thank you for making time. Oh, finally a good cocktail.
That's good.
Yeah. I've had a series of people choosing very bitter. Like, I'm a sweet drinks girl.
I'm also a sweet drink person.
Oh, so they've been very bitter cocktails so far. So I'm very grateful on this morning to have a delicious cocktail. So I want to start with all things broader and then get into your specific career.
Okay.
So you're in finance. First of all, Phumi Morare, like I said, is her name. You live in LA.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So you were in finance, and when did you decide to stop and pivot? Because now she's a director in film, living in LA, dreams. Yeah.
Yeah. So. It was actually a long journey. So I fell in love with film in high school, actually, mm-hmm. but then I didn't know that you can make it a career. And I was good at math, so that's why I like went into finance, mm-hmm. because my parents encouraged me to do like something in accounting or business and things like that. So I went into finance. My first job was in investment banking in London. And I think it was 2 years in where I felt like really unfulfilled, and I was working so hard, like 9 a.m. to midnight kind mm-hmm. of working. And I was like, if I'm going to give myself like over to something this much, then it better be something I actually like. And that's when the itch to find what it is that I like came. And it took me, I think, 4 years, which included a job change to consulting, to mm-hmm. actually like make the leap. Actually, probably even longer. I think it took me 5 years.
Yeah.
But I started kind of, I knew that I had this like itch to do film, and then mm-hmm. I started going to film festivals and networking with people, and I started doing short courses. And then eventually, after moving back to Joburg, I met a producer who gave me an internship, mm-hmm. and that was like my first way in.
Okay. Yeah. So now with studying finance, because I also have a pivoting journey, and I feel like the reason why I wanted you to come here is because, I mean, the stories are quite similar. You're obviously a little bit ahead, but I mean, the stories are similar in terms of like, you know, starting something, not feeling fulfilled, changing in your like later 20s and then finding your sort of your passion. But what is the catalyst that made you actually quit? Because other than, you know, was it the offer of the internship, or was this something that you were like, no matter if I don't have a job, I'm out?
So I think I was in this program in consulting that had like a 2 year time frame, and mm-hmm. I reached the end of that, and I had to decide, okay, what am I going to do now? During that program, they allowed me to do like external internships, and mm-hmm. that's how I did the film internship. So I had to decide, am I going to continue at this management consultancy, or am I going to do something else? Yeah. And initially, I was too scared and I stayed. So they gave me an offer to stay and I stayed. And then I was miserable. And I guess I had a series of conversations with friends, and one of my friends said to me, you know, Phumi, if you don't do the thing you love, then your soul starts to die. And I was like, you
literally. So true.
Yeah. And then another friend said to me, you know, what's the worst that could happen? One day when you look back on your life, usually you regret the things you didn't do more than the things you did. And he's like, you could always go and try, and then it doesn't work out. Yeah. So then that, those like conversations with like friends who knew me well helped me. And so after like a few months having accepted the offer to stay, I went back to them. I'm like, actually, I want to leave.
I'm sure they were very excited. And yeah. Your parents, like, how did they deal with it? Because was it their pressure, for you to do finance in the first place? Or is this just something that maybe you didn't know what else was out there? And so you followed that path?
Yeah, my parents were not happy. Like, I remember when I was in high school and they got their friends who were in finance to come and speak to me and say, you would be good doing this. You're good at maths and stuff. You like business. So when I stepped off that path, they were very kind of confused. They thought I was going through a weird phase.
Quarter life crisis.
Quarter life crisis, yes. And also, like, in high school when I had done, I used to do speech and drama as well. And they were like, oh, that's like really nice for like a hobby, you know? So,
oh my gosh, we have the same parents. They literally said the same thing. Cause FYI to those listening, both Pumi's parents and my parents are doctors. So I'm surprised they didn't push you into like sort of the medical lane.
Yeah.
But also for me, I was told just do a BCom and then you can pursue your hobbies on the side. I was like, well, acting is not a hobby. It's kind of what I want to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, continue. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it was really like the dream that I would be like an executive one day. And so when I stepped off that path, I think they just thought like all of their hard work and everything. Yeah, I was going down the drain and I felt bad because I was like, yeah, my parents worked so hard to, you know, give us all these opportunities. But then the way I saw it and the way I tried to position it to them is that you should also be proud that you have worked so hard that you have given me the opportunity to fulfill my dreams. I don't have to just think about how am I going to survive. I can actually self-actualize, and that's something that's really special and doesn't come by to everyone. So I tried to like help them accept it that way.
I think for me, what I also did was like when I was trying to tell them about dropping out, it was like, you guys took us to schools where people are doing the craziest things. Like white kids get to do painting and then pursue that as a career. And obviously they have trust funds and things to fall back on. But the one thing that you did by taking us to these schools is showing us anything is possible.
Yes.
So by saying, okay, these are the only three things, as if it's still like 1980.
Yes.
It's like, oh guys, please understand it's different now. Like people can make a career out of, I mean, making videos.
Yes.
That's literally what I do. So,
you do so much more than that.
I mean, like... sure, but I just mean that's one of the things that you can do now. Mm-hmm. But for you, was there ever a time where your finance actually became a passion? Did you think that, okay, look, this is what I have to do and I'm gonna and I'm actually enjoying it? Or were you always in that position where you were like, fuck my life?
Yeah, I think the reason I stayed as long as I did is because I did find something that I liked in it.
And making money.
Well, I mean, it wasn't even that. It was like I like business and I like thinking about the way business works. I like thinking about the economy, socioeconomic issues and things like that. So that has always been of interest to me. But then when I was doing it full time, it just wasn't like fulfilling me. And I would see some of my colleagues, like some of the passion that they had. And I would be like, wow, I wish I could be passionate like that about what we're doing. So I stayed long because I found something that was interesting. Like, for example, one aspect of my job that I really used to like was research. And I used to like research like different industries. And that was really fascinating to me.
Yeah.
And also I got to write as well, like my research reports. And so that kind of went into my love of writing already. Mm-hmm. But when I thought of like the broader meaning, cause like I'm very like meaning driven.
Yeah.
It was just not fulfilling.
Yeah. I think it's also very, you know, like this moment where you're good at something. But you also know that you can use those skills in something else, because being good at business, being good at research is very, very helpful in the world of filmmaking.
Yeah.
So what were your first steps to applying and taking the leap, and why LA?
Yeah, it's funny because, when I left London, I was like, I'm going home for good because I really like home.
me too, but sort of in a past tense way now.
Okay. Well, we should talk about that.
It's very sad.
Yeah. But like, I wanted to, so when I started working for this producer, I realized that I didn't actually just want to do producing. I wanted to write and direct. And so he was kind enough to let me, take time off work to shoot short films. And I was like, yes, I definitely need to write and direct, but I'm so far behind all of my peers. I need to go to school. Mm-hmm. So I looked for schools locally, actually, but a lot of them wanted me to do a bachelor's again.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't want to do, like, at my age, I think I was in my late 20s. I was like, at my age, I don't want to do another bachelor's and also be like going to school with high school students. I mean, recent like high school students. So some of my mentors said, oh, if you go abroad, they actually let you do a master's. Mm. So
I think also in this industry, just for me, I learned, like, I don't think bachelor's is that important. I don't want to send the kids off the path of education, but like training. I mean, once I got my bachelor's, I didn't know anything. I had to learn on the job. So I wish there were more training places in SA, than there are education places.
Yes, that definitely would have been helpful as well. Because for me, I was just like, I was looking for either like an apprenticeship kind of thing where I can like learn as I watch someone, or like a school kind of environment where I can have like focused practical learning.
Yeah,
practical learning. So I looked for masters that were practical. Mm-hmm. And so I applied in the UK and in the US. And then I got into two schools in the US. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I was actually kind of sad to leave, but I knew it was going to be good for me. Yeah. I knew I was going to network with like people from all over the world, get opportunities within like, I guess what people consider the center of like global filmmaking. Mm-hmm. And also get to be taught by people who are, you know, like global filmmakers. Yeah. So for me, I was like, this is worth it, but I am sad to leave home. And that's how I got to LA. And then when I got there, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. And I stayed for my career, but I do miss home a lot. And so right now I want to kind of live between both.
I mean, that's an option too, but I can tell you, having worked in the industry here, I don't know what it's like in America. And I'm still hoping to make that leap myself next year or the year after, but it feels kind of hopeless at this point sometimes. Like the stories I'm seeing come through, amazing. I'm glad Netflix is giving SA movies and stories a chance like that.
Yeah.
But having worked like in it, it's just some chaos shit goes down. Yeah. I graduated from London, mm-hmm. did my BA there and was like, I'm going to go home and make movies at home and make comedy a thing in SA. And like people who graduate after me don't have to think about leaving. It's, mm-hmm. it's going to be possible. And I want to be part of making that door, you know, open.
Yeah.
But having been here for like 7 years now, it keeps feeling like, more and more despondent. I don't feel like new people are given a chance. I don't feel like new stories. So, girl, stay. Do the bi-coastal thing, but as much as you can, stay. So now let's talk about your movie. Mm. I don't even want to.
Love Shani Lang.
Where the sun sets. So it was written. And also you said in an interview that I read before that you want to make stories that shine light on the feminine voice and on the African voice.
Yes.
So what was the, okay, first of all, tell us what your movie is about, mm-hmm. and then what was the inspiration behind choosing this specific topic?
So it's about a young black nurse during the 1980s in South Africa, mm-hmm. and she basically, her brother goes missing, and she has to figure out, like, what happened to him and how to save him. Mm-hmm. And he's also an activist, so there's also this other level of danger. And it was inspired by my mom and her brother, actually.
Oh, yeah. Is it like a real life? Are we watching like a biopic, basically?
It's not like 100% biopic, but it is inspired by a specific incident in my mom and brother's life where she saw him getting taken by apartheid cops, mm-hmm. and then she had to basically save him.
That is insane.
Okay, yeah, it's insane. A wild one.
That is really cool. I feel like the best stories come from personal, because apartheid people only think of certain icons or like there were 10 people who were affected by it. But these are the personal stories that are so much more interesting to me. And congratulations on all your awards. She is NAACP award winner. I think you won a student Oscar. You were nominated for the big boy Oscars.
Shortlisted.
But what is next? Like, are you not intimidated by your own previous success of like, now that I've been nominated, won awards, how can I keep that up?
It is intimidating, and it is, it does put a lot of pressure. Mm-hmm. Because now it's like, I can't just like do my work in silence, like by myself. Now, like, people are watching.
Yeah, and every time you put something, it's NAACP award winner.
Yes.
Kumi Morare.
Yeah, it is like a lot of pressure, but what I'm trying to do is kind of do it for myself. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, this next project is something that I'm just keen on,
yeah,
and not put the pressure of whether other people are going to like it or not. Mm-hmm. Because like when you do that, then you just go crazy.
You really do.
So,
and reading feedback is just like the worst thing you can do as a creative. Like sometimes now I just post and go.
Your feedback. There's actually this like website, now I forget the name, where audiences can like review films. Mm-hmm. And because our film was shortlisted for the Oscars, a lot of the Oscar films were getting reviewed there. And I was reading some of this stuff. I was like, wow, people can be so mean.
See, that's the thing. It's like not even about critique, because everybody needs to get feedback.
Yeah.
But sometimes people just go out of their way to be super mean and cutting.
Yeah, it's like not even constructive,
at
just
all.
Mean.
Yeah.
And it got to the point where like my friends are like, Pumi, you need to just like stop reading that stuff, mm-hmm, and just get on with your work. So yeah, you can't make stuff based on like what people are going to be saying, and yeah.
So now your next project, are you going to make all your movies centered around sort of personal stories? Or is it just apartheid? Like, what is your genre or and your interest?
So I guess I'm generally interested in a lot of things.
Sure.
So it's not just personal stories and it's not just historical, but it definitely is stuff set in South Africa, mm-hmm, and with strong female voices.
You may want to listen for the entire episode because every story has a plot twist. So now as I guess I can call you a Hollywood producer now, Hollywood director, writer, is your intention to, because I know your first film was made in Soweto, mm-hmm, using local, you know, languages, local actors, is that kind of the route you want to take? Or is it just like, I'm going to see, depending on the project, depending on what's needed, you know, then the choices will be made?
I definitely want to just reflect what is true to South Africa. So mm-hmm, definitely always local languages and local actors. And also, my goal is to elevate, our local talent,
yeah,
as well. So that's why I'm definitely always going to choose South African talent first. And even with the last film that I did, it was like a majority, actually pretty much all the crew was South African,
okay,
except for the cinematographer and the producer who came from my film school in, mm-hmm, California, because this was my thesis film. So yeah, it's definitely about elevating local languages, local stories, local talent.
Just FYI, I happen to be local talent. Anyway, just if you wanted to know. So I wanted to stick with women in storytelling. And I mean, I suppose because you haven't worked in the industry in South Africa, it's a lot more difficult maybe to have that conversation. But where do you think sort of the film industry is going with women storytellers, women storytelling? Do you think we're at the point where there is actually real diversity or real inclusion?
I think,
not to put this topic on your shoulders.
No, it's okay. I think, okay, we definitely have a long way to go, but I think the awareness is there that it's needed,
mm-hmm,
and the efforts, like people are starting to make those efforts, or they have been trying to make those efforts. So I think definitely there's progress, but a long way to go, especially with women behind the camera. There's just such a need for women directors, women writers, women producers. And I know like that there's efforts to make it happen.
Yeah. I think one of the series and why I wanted to include sort of business stories or personal stories is because I felt like everybody that I spoke to wanted to be an actor.
Mm.
And maybe it's because the only thing that South Africans get, you know, aware of, like, oh, this is a star, this is what you want to be. But I just felt like there's no one in, every time I have to go do a job, a man is the one who's pressing the mic on my boobs, and I'm just like, where are the women in sound? Because this would be so much more comfortable. Or where are the women cinematographers? Like, is it because they're not there, or because people are not hiring them, or because as students, when you leave school, all you see is what is celebrated, and that's the person in front of the camera.
Mm.
But yeah, I would love to do more series, more, I don't know what, even in my last dream, it's like there's an academy that has just girls and it's focused on creating women who work behind the scenes.
Yeah, that would be so great.
I know. I've had my Oprah dream for years. Hopefully one day, but you know.
Yes, steps to go before that will then. Happen. It's out in the universe.
It is out there. America first, and then we come back and open the school. Okay, so what would you say to people, you know, coming up where, I think because if you were in your late 20s and you did say, you know, you didn't want to be necessarily in a school with matriculants, but women who want to make a pivot at a later stage in life, who decide that what they're doing now is just not working. Do you have any advice as to what to do in that situation?
Yeah, I mean, what I would say is that just the advice that a friend of mine gave me, which was, what would you regret not doing one day? And go and do that thing.
Yeah.
And it does like take a lot of courage. And you do have to, you know, look at the financial situation that you're going to be in and make plans. Because like when I went to film school, I only had enough savings to last me like the first semester.
Oh my gosh. So it's so expensive there though. My gosh.
Yo, it's so expensive.
As well.
Yeah. And so I had to like figure out, okay, how am I going to get funding for this? So I had to, you know, look at like research bursaries and scholarships and all of that and be constantly, I had to apply for that like every year. And I was doing 3 years of film school. So I had to apply for stuff every year. And also like I had to work, jobs while I was at film school as well. Like I worked on campus. And so it's definitely, you have to prepare yourself financially and prepare yourself mentally for that financial hit. It is really hard, I won't lie.
And also the fact that your life will be very different for those years.
Yes. Unless your pivot is something that, you know, is already going to bring in money, then that's
from day
just
one,
another
it's
story.
It's quite unlikely. I mean, good luck. Because for me, when I left, I didn't have a plan. I was working behind the scenes, but it was very much a thankless job. And I just felt like I'm writing for presenters, scripts. And people would be like, oh, they're so funny, or this person's so funny. And I was like, no, I am. I'm writing the script. I can do it myself. So I left without a plan, without a job. I was just like, I just can't do this. I just can't watch other people live my dream off my words and stuff. So I just kind of, I left. I was very broke. I was, at some point, I even thought, okay, I need to look for a job again. And then luckily, just when the desperation level, because I also had a supportive mother and luckily had someone who was like, look, try, but there is a deadline and then you're going to have to go back to work.
Yeah.
And then luckily at the point of like, okay, fuck, I have to go back. Kells just then blew up, but it doesn't happen all the time. And it was 3 years of like struggle and brokenness and mental health decline and just like not knowing what was next and will it actually happen for me just because I want it.
Yeah.
So yeah, what would you say to people in those situations where it's like, sure, it's just not working?
Yeah, that is very...
Or seemingly not working because you never know what's around the corner.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, yeah, so I would say you just have to keep going because the whole thing about these kinds of sort of pivots and these kind of jobs and sort of pursuits is that it requires perseverance and it requires staying power. And a lot of the time what they say, like in the film industry, for example, is that the people who make it are the ones who just stayed long enough to keep fighting.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So that's how I'd encourage people is just like persevere. And it's tough. I won't lie. You can't candy coat how hard it is to do this kind of stuff. I mean, the first year after I graduated, like, I was living month to month, actually. Cause like, the funny thing is like, the film was like doing all these awards circuits and getting all this press, but I was living month to month.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't think people realize like that I'm financially distressed.
And that the awards don't really show the bank account.
Yeah,
like, and Oscar doesn't come with like $1 million.
No, it doesn't. And so, yeah, it was really, really tough. I had two jobs actually, while I was in LA. And
what were you doing?
So one of them, okay, when you enter the film industry as a newbie, you get like the bottom of the bottom kind of job. So I was an assistant, at a sales company. They like sell films around the world. And then I was also working for this company that finances films by African women.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was cool because I got to use my business skills for that. And that one, I had a more senior role, which is nice. But it was also a startup. Mm. So, you know, startups don't have
money,
you know. Yeah. So that's kind of why I had to have two jobs. And so when people ask me about, like, you know, entering the film industry, I try and like tell them, look, it's not just all sunshine and roses. Pursuing your dreams isn't always
sometimes
just like,
you have to make coffee for people and sometimes you have to sweep set after people leave. And I literally had to like steam clothes and tape shoes. That's what I first did.
Yeah. Ooh. And nobody, it's funny because no one in the film industry took into account my previous work experience.
Nobody gives a fuck that you're a financial guru.
Yeah, they don't care. They're like, this is something else. It's starting from scratch.
And I'm like, oh, you're 32. Why am I like in an intern's job? Girl, start again.
Yes, it's hard. And the hard thing about that as well is the friends that, or your peers that you left in the industry that you left, they're progressing, they're buying cars, they have apartments.
Oh my God.
And you're like, I'm still like living month to month. So it's, and that's also hard for parents because they know your peers, right? And they're like,
and they know you left. And they like, know now you're like, oh, you see.
Yeah. So that's really hard. That's actually one of the, sometimes I'd have to like turn off social media, like, sort of log out of my app for a month or two just to like not compare myself to what other people were doing and just like stick to my path. Yeah.
So between the time of the film, when did the first successes come? Because in my head, and what I've read, I think it's like went to school, graduated, won an Oscar kind of thing or in NAACP and is now here. Like what was the actual length of time in this journey?
So, school officially ended in May 2020, but because of the pandemic, I graduated in August.
Okay.
And then, I think the first kind of major award was maybe the following year, May, June.
Okay.
And in between, we weren't seeing that much traction. And I was just like, oh, maybe this film is like, you know,
not as good as
mediocre. Yeah, I thought maybe it's mediocre. I don't know. So I was like, oh, okay, well, at least we tried, you know. So I think between August and May, June, that's kind of how I was feeling. And then I think the first thing was the Student BAFTA Awards.
I'm not even a BAFTA girl. You were in London. You were in LA. Okay.
Yeah. So that was like, so we got on, we found out we were shortlisted and I was like, oh, this film is actually like something. Okay.
And it's also so nice that a Xhosa film is making waves in London, making waves in LA.
Yes.
That is just incredible.
Yeah. That really blew my mind away, you know, and I think also I was nervous about that because I was doing film school in the US and it was like a huge kind of leap to convince my school to let me shoot a South African film in South Africa.
Really?
Yeah, it was. I had to jump through hoops.
Why did they not want authentic stories? What is it? Just everybody has to make an LA or Hollywood type of film?
It wasn't that. It was more just like logistically. They felt like they wanted people to shoot in California. And they were like, you can just recreate South Africa and California. And I was like, no, I cannot. Like,
continents were to do not look alike no matter what.
Yeah. I even like went out and like tried and looked for places and I was like, no, it's not going to work, you know? So, it was more just logistics and they were just like scared to like allow these students to just fly across the world without any, you know, supervisors.
Like insurance for South Africa.
Yeah, exactly. So that was hard to get that to happen. But, you know, one of the things that I also thought in that process was, oh, I'm making the South African story, but I'm based in the US. I wonder if people even care, you know, but I just thought, you know what? I care. This is my thesis. The stakes are low. Yeah,
just want to graduate.
Yeah. And also it's just a story I really, really wanted to tell. Mm. And so to see that getting the international attention was just mind blowing to me. Yeah, because I was like, it's a story about a black African woman in the 1980s
in Soweto.
Yeah, and there's hardly any English as well. So it was really mind blowing.
So living in LA, the choice of making this movie, was there never any pressure for you to be like, let me not sell out, because, you know, people making Hollywood-esque films or English films is not necessarily a sellout if that's what you want to do. But any point where you were like, okay, let me just do what is easiest. I'm in California. I can make a story about a nurse in LA.
Yeah. Yeah, there definitely was that temptation because it was easier. But, and I had like done a few student films throughout my film school degree that were based in America. Mm. But I felt like the most authentic version of me as a storyteller was telling stories from home. Mm. And so I felt like, you know, I could do this. I could tell an American story, but it just doesn't feel like me. And then at the same time, I was also feeling like, you know, I almost felt a responsibility to tell South African stories as well. So yeah, that's why I just decided to take the risk to do it.
I think for me, like, my biggest fear, because I want to tell South African stories, and also especially that kind of thing of like unsung apartheid heroes who aren't necessarily heroes. It wasn't struggle things, just somebody living their life, you know, like my grandfather's story. Oh, I'm not going to say it on air because someone's going to steal this idea, but I'll talk to you afterwards. But just wanting to tell those stories. But I was always so scared of like, how does it translate there? And why would I move that side to then tell stories that people might not understand, and then I'd have to maybe make it an English version or an American version. So have you never thought about that or felt that pressure to translate your stories into English to make it in America?
Oh, yes. I mean, I did have people telling me, why is this in a South African language? You should make it in English. Mm. And I was like, that's just like not authentic, because people in the 80s are not going to be speaking English majority of the time like we do today. Mm. So I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. And so for me, it was more about, I guess it was also an experiment, you know, because it was the first time I was sticking to my guns of telling the story that I thought needed to be told. And because the stakes were so low, it's just a student film. Mm. I felt like I had the room to just take those risks. And so it was actually like a good experiment to see what would happen. Yeah. And luckily, like, it turned out well, but it also, it's not, I don't think it's something that has always been the case as well. Mm. It's just also a stroke of luck that I told that story at this particular point in time where the world is opening up to international stories. I even came across people saying, you know, if this was 7 years ago, the story wouldn't have gone that far.
Yeah.
But now people's minds
Africa's kind of a trend right now as well, which is really cool.
Yeah, we are trending right now.
I mean, I don't want to say like that, but it's cool. Like, you know, these festivals in America. I mean, I think Burna Boy just sold out Madison Square Garden or Wizkid. One of them was the first African artist, a Nigerian, singing Nigerian music in New York and selling out would never happen also 7 years ago. So I really feel like we're like on vogue right now, and I'm loving this moment for us.
Yeah, it's a great moment, and we all need to be able to make the most of it. Yeah.
So what is one of, let's talk role models. I know I don't like that word, but like whatever, it is what it is. Or mentors, or just people whose careers you look at and you say, that's that girl for me.
Mm.
Or man, I guess, but I'd love to, I'd love it if it was a woman.
Yes.
Who are the people you look at in film, directing, creating, writing, who you say, I want to be that person in 10 years, 5 years?
Yeah. I mean, there's a few people. Chloe Zhao is one of them. Mm. Like, I think she went to NYU and she made some like independent artistic films, like for the first two or three films. And then she like made this Marvel movie. So, and everyone was like, oh, Chloe Zhao, this artsy director is making a Marvel movie. Wow. You know, and I love that. I love that she could do anything, you know. And so that's kind of one of the people I follow in this terms of my tastes are both like artistic nouveau kind of films, but I also love superhero films. I love fantasy, sci-fi. And so
give us an African superhero movie. I mean, not Black Panther. I mean, like, like superhero from Soweto.
Yes. I am all for that kind of storytelling. So like one day I hope that I can do that. And people also like, I guess Jane Campion, mm-hmm. she just won best director at the Oscars. And she's always, it's funny because this film was the first, I heard her say it's the first film where she had a male lead, mm-hmm. but all of her films and throughout her entire career have always been these like subversive female characters and female characters that you just never would expect to see on screen. Like she's always got this very interesting, like eccentric and dark, characters. And so she's also one of my inspirations. Ava DuVernay. She's just, one thing I really love about her is she's not just a filmmaker. She also empowers other women. Mm. So she makes an effort on like the TV shows that she does to hire women directors.
Yeah.
And she's got like, she makes a lot of effort to empower, people of color as well. So I really just love her, not just like the films that she makes, but also just like the mission that she has.
I also like the similarity between the two of you in that.
Oh.
I know.
Okay. I'll receive.
Girl. But just in the way, cause you mentioned her now and I was like, okay, I can see why. Her storytelling is always about these stories that, black people know, mm-hmm. but we don't really discuss or that the mainstream world doesn't know. So like when they see us was, I know that story about Central Park Five. It's been something that I grew up, my mom spoke to me about, but it was not a story that white people necessarily know. And so taking these stories of apartheid again, or I guess the civil rights movement, or, you know, just racism in general, and putting them on the public stage, but not in the way that people expect and not with the same characters, but Martin Luther and Mandela. Yeah, I like that. I like that in your guys' storytelling, both of you.
Yeah, no, she's very inspiring, and the work she does has social impact, which is, it's something you can only like hope for.
Yeah. Okay, so what is next for Pumi Murray, LA Hollywood director?
What's next? So,
I mean, other than the 17 movies you're working on currently.
Yeah, I mean, that's literally what's next. It's the short film I'm trying to shoot, by the end of this year. That we're finishing financing for. It's these two feature films that I'm writing. I get to flex some of my muscles in other genres, which is what I am keen for.
That is amazing. And I mean, I should have probably started with this, but anecdotal time. Pumi's parents are both doctors. My parents are both doctors. My mom, actually, when I was leaving today, I was like, okay, I'm going to go interview Pumi, whatever. And she set this up kind of. I think she and your aunt were like, let's get these girls to meet because what? They're interested in the same things and we're interested in each other and like, let's make this happen.
Mm-hmm.
But, she told me that at boarding school, your mom was kind of like her boarding school mom, even though they were both students. So like a matric would maybe take on a grade 8 baby or just a junior. And your mom was that person to my mom. So that was really, really weird. Cause I was like, what?
I'm going
to
tell this my world. Mom.
She was just like, tell her she was so nice to me and she protected me. And so it's, I mean, the smallness of this world is just, it always shocks me.
Yeah. Because, it is so small.
Yeah. The parallels. And we went to boarding school in the same area.
Yes.
You were at my, I guess it was at a rival school. Did we even have rivalries as girls?
Yes, we did. It was. I remember it being a rival school.
Because I was there only from grade 10 to 12. So for me, it was just like, can I just finish and get out of here?
Yeah.
Mind-blowingly racist and small-minded and I can't stand it. But
gosh.
Goodness, I just, like, yeah. So having gone to the same schools, having the similar parents, a similar story of pivoting, I was just like, okay, God, I get it. I'll interview her.
Yeah. And I just felt like so honored because when my aunt was telling me about you, I was like, oh my gosh, I love her. She like inspires me so much. Oh, I really look up to you and like the incredible work you do. You're super smart and savvy and hilarious. And just like, yeah. So
Black
definitely.
Girl
flesh. Yeah. So yeah, I feel honored because I definitely like look up to you. And also just when I think about my career, and just like watching the things that you have done, it's very inspiring.
Okay. I didn't know what to say because I was going to say all of that to you.
What?
Okay. Yes. Like I was like, okay, after this, I need to go pick her brain because I need to get out of here. I'm going to write something. I just want to spend some time. And I also don't feel like South Africa is, you know, bottom of the barrel. There are lots of problems right now and it's mainly our leadership, but I do see myself also hopefully affording a bi-coastal experience or bi-continental life. But really, I when I read your articles, and my mom told me about you for the first time, I've been like, oh my God, she's who I want to be when I grow up.
Wait, like the same age. That is so weird, because I talk to people about you, like even in the US, I'm like, oh my gosh, you have to like watch this thing. Like, it's so hilarious. She's so good. Like, I can't wait to see where her career is going. So,
okay, for me, we're in love and we need to collaborate, because this is like embarrassing for the listeners. But thank you so much for making time in your clearly very busy schedule. It is a Saturday, for those of you who don't know. It's a Saturday morning, and she made time for me. So thank you so much for coming to Convos and Cocktails. I hope you enjoyed your cocktail. It's still very full.
It's because we're talking so much.
That's true. And we still, I mean, we're going to go for a little drink now if you're free.
Yes,
I'm asking you out on the radio. but to those listening, thank you so much for joining us on another amazing episode of Convos and Cocktails. I hope you remember, it's never too late to pivot. It's never too late to start again, and your dreams are valid. Good night. Goodbye. Oh, it might be the daytime. Bye.
Bye.
Convos and Cocktails, produced in partnership with Lesotho Tlhabi and WMG Rep. Drinks never end at the bar. So join me over at the socials with your cocktail, where we get to continue the conversations. Simply follow me at Lesotho Tlhabi. See you there. Recorded at Solid Gold Podcasts. Solid Gold. To be understood, you must first be heard. I look forward to our next Convos and Cocktails, and don't forget, mo money, mojito, or whatever Biggie said.